caring for your pet this winter. We've seen some super cold weather recently, and a big storm is on the way for the weekend. Chances are your snow tires are already on the car, your storm windows are in place, and the pantry is stocked up. You're taking care of the humans in your family, but what about your pet? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we talk with Maine veterinarians about taking care of your dog or cat or other pets this winter. We'll also learn more about the expanding recall of certain dog foods, pet insurance, and more. What are your questions about caring for your pet? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Pets can provide their owners great comfort and joy. They can also cause them great concern and sometimes great expense. Today, I have three veterinarians with me to answer your questions about caring for your pets, including the questions about the value of a grain-free diet, which seems to be a trend these days. Joining me in the studio, Kate Domenico. She is a veterinarian at Tender Touch Veterinary Hospital in Scarborough. Deirdre Fry should be here any minute. She's the owner of Vet at Your Door, a house call veterinary practice with branches in Greater Portland, Midcoast, Sugarloaf, and Southern Maine. And Ezra Steinberg, a surgeon with Maine Veterinary Medical Center. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have when it comes to the health and well-being of your dog or cat or other four-legged or winged or scaled animal in your home? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. I'm going to start by asking each of you what you're seeing more of this time of year than you see the rest of the year. Ezra.
So I would say our hospital, being a specialty and emergency hospital, has seen a fair amount of trauma this year. I don't know if it's the weather. We've had minimal snow and a lot of ice, but we've seen a bunch of slips and falls, which creates hip luxations, some soft tissue trauma, and some fractures. And I don't know if it's this type of year or what's going on in the state, but a fair amount of marijuana exposure as well. But that does not seem to be as seasonal. It's just increasing in frequency.
Well, you know, marijuana is legal in Maine now. And why don't we take this opportunity to talk about what that means for your pets? Some people may think it's funny or no big deal to expose their pets to marijuana.
I would say it's the almost every single case has been accidental exposure, and it's mostly with edibles. So like people leave these cookies on their coffee table and obviously the dog's going to eat them. So I'd say undoubtedly it's been accidental exposure, and it can definitely be dangerous. So we're also talking about medicinal use, which there's a fair amount of research going on in the states these days with CBD, and somewhat minimal with THC so far, but the majority of the stuff that people have at home has psychoactive properties, and they can it's very, very treatable if you get them there quickly, but it can be dangerous.
So you're a surgeon. By the time they come to you, what kind of surgery do they need?
So that's not me. That's the emergency service that's dealing with them.
Okay.
Hopefully it doesn't require surgery beyond that.
Okay. I'll turn to you, Kate. Dr. Domenico, what are you seeing right now that is maybe more seasonal?
I would say at this point in the wintertime, because of the salt use on the roads, a lot of people are walking their dogs on these icy areas, and they have a lot of paw irritation from walking on those salt products. So rinsing off the feet when the dogs come in from outside. We still see, surprisingly, it's not seasonal, but we still see cats coming in with fleas, cats that stay indoors. And so they've brought them in from the summertime, and they're still there.
So people
always think that, you know, you can't see fleas in the wintertime, but I've seen three in the last week.
And I'm guessing some people maybe take the flea collar off or don't do the preventative measures because they think it's winter. Right.
Exactly.
Right. Well, bringing you into the conversation and welcome, Dr. Fry, what are you seeing this time of year?
So I'm seeing a lot of arthritis around this time of year, just because I think of the ice and the, you know, the snow is more difficult to get around for our furry friends. So I think their aches and pains tend to be maximized a little bit around this time of year. So it's nice to be able to talk to people about, you know, how to manage that arthritis to really keep your animal as pain-free as possible during this time of year.
And I wanted to talk about that generally, care for keeping your animals safe and healthy in the winter. I think a lot of people, you know, maybe if their dog has short hair, will put a little sweater or coat on before they go on a walk, and maybe go on a shorter walk when it's really cold. But that's really interesting. Arthritis is not the only thing that an animal can have that can be affected by the cold, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, a lot of things that can, you know, be more difficult, I guess, in the winter. And keeping your animal warm is important when you're out on a walk. And, yeah, like there are those, you know, jackets that you can certainly put on, but also just not leaving your dog outdoors, you know, for a period of time, just being mindful. If you don't want to be out there, generally, they don't want to be out there either.
And this is even true for dogs like huskies?
Yeah, I mean, that it definitely, by the breed, it's definitely different by breed. But you don't want to be putting your, you know, smaller animal or whatnot in the elements. But yeah, huskies love this weather. Bernese Mountain Dogs love this weather. This is their element. However, you know, you still want to keep an eye on them.
Okay. I want to have Ezra and Kate, you all join in too. What are some winter tips for your pets?
We just saw the Portland Police Department on the national news. My dad called me from New York saying the Portland PD was on there with their dogs with booties. So sometimes protecting them with booties when it's really cold out. I know that my dog, when it's really cold outside, doesn't want to put any leg down and just sits there and picks up each leg at a time. So I think boots are a really good idea if they're going to be outside. But like Dr. Fry said, keep them indoors and don't let them out too long.
Any tips on getting your dog to not pull the booties off as you put them
that's
on?
That's going to be dog specific. There are no tricks. Some dogs will wear them, some will not.
And anything to add to this, Kate?
Well, I think it's interesting, but, you know, in Maine, we have a lot of sporting dogs and people that take their dogs out on hikes in the winter. And there was just a story in the news about the fire department being called to rescue a man who fell in the ice after going after his dog who fell through the ice. So I think that's a big concern about people just being aware of that there might be thin ice with these freeze-thaw cycles and being careful because your dog is not smart enough to know that it can't walk on thin ice.
So if you're getting
if
you're getting close to a pond or a lake, maybe put that dog on the leash.
Correct.
Before he or she runs out onto the lake. Big news right now in your world. First, you know, about a month and a half ago, it was announced a recall of a whole bunch of dried dog foods. But now that recall has been expanded. Can you tell me, Kate, about that recall? The problem, I read elevated levels of vitamin D in the dogs. How does that happen and why is that a problem?
Yeah, and it has to do with the manufacturing of the diets, and they're just either their quality controls, and I don't know exactly what the companies are doing on the level of quality controls before this happened, but it's all about sourcing ingredients and trying to figure out where the breakdown in their production has occurred to cause this to happen. But in dogs, we've seen kidney failure. With that, you remember back to 2007 when they had speculated about 8,600 dogs and cats die from kidney failure when they had that adulterated wheat gluten from melamine, and that caused renal failure as well. So it's interesting, we were talking about mentioning the grain-free diets, and a lot of people went to the raw diets and the homemade diets after this recall and all these pet foods in 2007. And I think that's where the drive to make your own diets started. And now people have really gone off and done their own dietary research, and it's not always adequate.
These dog foods that have been recalled, do they have something in common? Are they a certain type of dog food? Or
I don't believe that they have anything in common. It's the most of those dog food diets are being produced, and they're getting their ingredients from very much the same sources. So if you look at all these dog foods, they're getting all this common ingredient, whether it be wheat gluten or soy or whatever their protein component of their diet, maybe grains. might be coming from the same place. And so that's why there's multitude of food. So even if you have one pet food company, it's getting the ingredient from the same place.
And you mentioned just a minute ago that a lot of people now are making their own pet food, and you say that's not often a good idea.
Right, because they don't have all the components of a complete diet. So I usually counsel my clients to purchase a high-quality diet that's formulated by a company that has scientific research to prove that diet is adequate. And there's no perfect diet.
Ezra's nodding. You've said this on the air before.
Absolutely. It's not like people think that just the most expensive diet is going to be the best, and they have all these boutique diets that are formulated by somebody with zero veterinary experience. So I think it's really the research and development, and then trusting your veterinarian, asking your veterinarian if you find a food that you think is great just because it says organic and no GMO and that it costs 3 times the amount of a normal pet food, don't think that it's just better than all the rest. Talk to your vet.
We're talking with 3 Maine veterinarians about pet care this winter and about some of the items in the news in the pet world. If you have questions, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're also inviting folks to post a picture of your pet on our Facebook post today. Put it in the comments section. We'll have some fun with that. Pictures of maybe dogs playing in the snow or something like that. I want to talk just briefly, if we can, though, Dr. Fry, about pet insurance. I read that it's going up every year, how many people participate in pet insurance programs. 17% rise in 2017 over 2016. But it's kind of buyer beware. What do you advise your patients when they're thinking about pet insurance?
Well, I think it's important to talk to your veterinarian, because we actually deal, I guess, a lot with different pet insurance companies. And so, you know, we're not paid by them at all. But it's just good to know someone, I think, with experience, as well as fellow pet owners who've actually had to use it, and, you know, how much money did they get back and that sort of thing. But it is on the rise, and especially in European countries, it's a lot more popular than it is here. But it's really nice when, you know, just like our health insurance, you know, paying for it every month, it sometimes is a tough pill to swallow. But when that emergency happens, it is really, really nice to have, to not have that worry. So if you have that kind of in your back pocket, you can really be rest assured that you're not going to have to make a difficult decision based on finances.
Do any of the 3 of you have brands to recommend that have a great reputation?
So I would not give out the name of a brand just on air. What I think, and I kind of made a list of things that are pretty important when sort of researching pet insurance companies, because there are a bunch of them, but some main things that you need to keep in mind are what is covered. And there are wellness packages, and then there are sort of catastrophic packages. And you need to think, like, is this something that you want to put your money into just to cover routine vaccines? Or is this something that, like, you understand the cost of routine vaccines and heartworm and flea and tick preventative, and this is just a backup plan if something major happens? You want to check the company and make sure they've been around for more than a couple months, and make sure that they have some support behind them, that they're easily reachable. One big thing is it a reimbursement policy? So traditionally, they've all been reimbursement. So you have to put the money up front, and then you send in your documentation, and within a couple days to a couple weeks to a couple months, you'll get your money. There are some now that pay up front, so you don't have to lay down that money, which can be tough, especially if you're paying the insurance premium. And then, like, can it be used at any hospital, or is it just your hospital? Like, is there an in-network or out-of-network situation? And then even check your employer, because some employers get discounts on policies, which that little bit helps.
I read that. I read 11% of employers offer some form of pet insurance.
Great.
So showing how the world is changing a little bit. And finally, you know, here we are in winter. I think a lot of people think, wow, it's been really cold. I can kind of not worry about things like Lyme disease right now. What do you think, Kate? Do we worry about Lyme disease when we've had these really cold nights?
I think that's a reasonable presumption. But again, going back to the flea problem, ticks not so much in the wintertime. They're pretty dormant during these extremely cold temperatures. I believe it has to be over, I think, 40 degrees for them to come out of their dormancy, and I think that's for like a 24-hour period. So if we have a sustained several, you know, weeks of these very cold temperatures, I think the Lyme risk is low. But then we become complacent, and then we get these warm-up days come the spring, and no one's applied preventative, and then we have these couple of months where we have these rise in temperatures. So I think either, you know, using year-round preventative, either the topicals or tablets or, you know, whatever the preferred product by your veterinarian is. And the biggest thing that I counsel my clients is not using over-the-counter products, because they there's some toxicity associated with a certain species, and then also they're not very effective on the fleas and ticks.
Anyway, we'll go to a call. We'll go to Suzanne, who's calling from VZ. Hi, Suzanne. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 16-month-old wire fox terrier. Last November, he suddenly began vomiting small amounts of bile almost every morning. His diet hadn't changed, so I called the breeder, and she said it wasn't unusual and he should grow out of it. She also recommended probiotics, specifically dog zymes. After a month on the dog zymes, he didn't improve, so we took him to our veterinarian just on January 2nd. He prescribed a stronger probiotic, and Royal Canine Gastro Intestinal Food. He's still vomiting 4 to 5 mornings now. He's certainly not lethargic. His energy level and playful terrier attitude are just fine. But his weight is 16.5 pounds, which is less than normal for a male wire fox terrier. 20 or 21 pounds would be more normal. Are there any suggestions as what we can do at this point in time?
Sure. Is he vomiting in the morning?
Just before, like a morning sickness.
Before
I'll
he
take
eats?
Take him out. He goes to the bathroom. Does everything. Lo and behold, he seems fine, and he has to go back outside, and he does like not a large amount, but he does vomit.
Okay. Yeah, because sometimes it can be called bilious vomiting, where if they haven't eaten in a while, it can kind of make them a little bit nauseous, and the acid can build up in the belly. So one thing you could try potentially is to feed that evening meal a little bit later, or maybe give a snack before bed, and just see if that might help, you know, reduce the incidence of it. Because sometimes when just that acid can kind of build up overnight, it can make them just feel nauseous. So you could potentially try that. But if that doesn't work, then there are, you know, more extensive tests that you can do. Sometimes they have a food allergy, for example. So trying, you know, different proteins in the food can help, you know, different foods that have different proteins in it, and kind of play around with that. But I would give, you know, the evening snack a try, personally.
Okay. When you say evening, for an example, last night I fed him at 8 o'clock last night,
mm-hmm.
a snack.
Yeah.
And I happened to give him my other dog's food, which is Science Diet Sensitive Stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what the heck, let me give him a little bit of that. And I gave him the probiotic at 8 o'clock last night.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so far so good. He's having a very good day.
Well, that's good.
He hasn't vomited any bile. So I'm, you know, so perhaps. Now, I did try giving him this later, like 5:30, 6 o'clock, and it didn't help because I had been told about this acid stomach on a small dog, you know, on an empty stomach, you know, feeding him later. But regardless, I'll try that first. Are there
antacids
that
yes.
you could get the
yep,
dog.
There are. You can try, you can talk to your veterinarian about a dose. Yep, there are.
All right. Well, Suzanne, thank you for your call. We'll move on to Ashley calling from Portland.
Hi there. My name is Ashley. I'm from Portland. I have a pit bull rescue. She's from LA. She was transferred to Georgia to a kill shelter and then brought up here to Portland. She has a very serious, aggressive attitude towards other dogs. And she actually just sent a dog to the vet recently whose vet bill was several thousand dollars to, you know, for the surgeries and everything. And I was wondering if there was any kind of pit bull rescue in Portland or any advice you could give me as a pet owner that doesn't want to euthanize her or put her down. I was wondering if there's any kind of, you know, anything I can do besides that, or, you know, rehoming her, if there's any kind of anything I can do.
Okay. I'm not sure if our guests have the answer. Do you all know?
Well, I was going to say that there's a, I've worked with several people that are willing to take on aggressive dogs and try to rehabilitate them and rehome them. The difficult part for the shelters, if you know, obviously brought the dog to a shelter, that's it's a liability for anyone rehoming an aggressive dog, especially if it involves like a human bite. You know, it's not uncommon to have dog aggression. Sometimes, you know, in the pit bull breeds, we see dog aggression in any breed, but particularly there. They're very good with people at times, but they just have, you know, some kind of discombobulation with other dogs. So I certainly, you know, there are people out there that do rescue them.
Ashley, good luck to you. We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Bernstein Scherer, a law firm that helps its clients navigate the law and the demands of their industries. BernsteinScherer.com.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, a new documentary may provide a reckoning for R. Kelly, the R&B star who's long been accused of sexual abuse.
So he was at his trial, on trial for having sex with an underage girl, and he was cruising 11th graders on that trial. The hubris.
We'll hear from filmmaker Dream Hampton next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Saturday afternoon at 2 and Sunday evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio.
Did you know that some of the greatest discoveries in the world were accidents? Like penicillin, x-ray images, popsicles?
The pacemaker.
Smoke detectors.
Potato chips.
On the next Planet Money, we discover the crazy genius of serendipitous inventions.
And on How I Built This, we meet the brothers from Ireland who invented a more secure way to make credit card payments.
It's an hour of economics and innovation on Planet Money.
And How I Built This from NPR.
Coming up Saturday, tomorrow morning at 11, on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, answers to your pet care questions. Joining me in the studio, Deirdre Fry, who is owner of Vet at Your Door, a house call veterinary practice with branches in Greater Portland, Midcoast, Sugarloaf, and Southern Maine. Ezra Steinberg, a surgeon at Maine Veterinary Medical Center, and Kate Domenico, a veterinarian at Tender Touch Veterinary Hospital in Scarborough. We invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Max on Facebook posted a picture of his bull mastiff named Watson. Adorable. We have fed Watson a raw homemade diet since he came home from the breeder. He is just over 3 and never have had any problems feeding raw. Can your panel talk about the benefits of the raw diet?
Well, my top concern about the raw diets, and it's interesting, we were talking about the food recalls, but there is an actual listserv for the dog food recalls that anyone can sign up for, and it'll send you emails every time that there's a dog food recalled. But the number one foods that are being recalled for Listeria, E. coli, and Salmonella are raw food diets. So with that said, there's a lot of breeders that do advise those diets for their clients, and they believe that they are superior diets to manufactured foods. There are some dogs that do have food sensitivities and food allergies that do respond to raw diets because of an extraneous ingredient or preservative that's in the manufactured dog foods, and that may work for them. But as a whole, and even the American Veterinary Medical Association has a stance against raw diets because of food safety concerns, not only for the dog, but for people handling it. For dogs that come in contact with small children or elderly that may transmit this E. coli or salmonella from these raw foods. It's just like, you know, when they say on your countertops, clean, if you're cutting up raw chicken for your family, it's as if you're, you know, putting the same thing in your dog's food bowl and they go and lick your family's face and it becomes a transmission problem.
Do you have any advice for someone who's hearing this and has been feeding their pet a raw food diet and says, okay, I'll transition to a regular, traditional, conventional diet? How does one do that? I'm guessing you don't just go out and buy a bag of dog food and feed your dog a scoop, do you?
No, and you want to do it gradually and feed, you know, any kind of food transition to a new food for and that's for any diet. It needs to be a gradual transition. So over several, you know, day to week period, you would mix those two diets together. And again, consult with your veterinarian. I've always also recommended that people cook the raw food diet if they want to feed that, because that would eliminate those bacteria.
Okay, and you mentioned that there's a listserv. How does somebody sign up for the listserv?
You can just Google dog food recall, and it will send you to a website that where you put in your email address, and it will give you send you the link to setting up your and get automatic emails for that. Whenever there's a dog food recalled, it'll send you an email alert.
Great, because today we posted on our Facebook page and our webpage a magazine article with this most recent recall, but this will be perpetual if you sign up for the listserv and always
Correct.
Find out if yours is on it. Ezra, you want to jump
Jennifer,
in?
Jennifer, I just wanted to say to Max's question, I think he asked what the benefits were. And so, like, I'm of the belief that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if it's working well for your dog, I'm not telling you not to feed raw, but to ask a question, what are the benefits? The answer is that we don't really know, because there is no proof behind it. So nobody's really doing enough research with raw food. So if people come to me and the dog doesn't have good skin and has GI problems and they're feeding raw, it's fine. Like, we can talk about changing it. But if everything is going okay, I think it's okay to keep it on the raw food. We don't accept it in our hospital. So if an animal comes in on a raw diet and they are spending the night because they're having a procedure done or they need to be hospitalized, we don't take raw food into our hospital. And I think that should tell you something.
We'll go to Lori, who's calling from Appleton. Hi, Lori. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I was hoping the panel could shed some insight on the change in prescription methods for HeartGuard or similar heartworm medicines. In the not-so-distant past, it seemed I could go to a pet store and pick up HeartGuard for my dogs and be on my way. I attempted to do that last year or the year before, and all of a sudden it requires a vet prescription. And that's even true if you go to buy it online. I'm curious if the panel has any insight as to why that changed and what insight they could offer.
Sure. I don't know exactly when you could have gotten the HeartGuard. I wasn't aware that you could get it without a prescription even previously. But the reason for that, and I understand it can be frustrating to kind of come up against that because, you know, especially if you've done it in the past and now you can't do it. But the reason behind it is that heartworm disease is very serious, and it is what it sounds like. So there are these little kind of worms going around in your dog's bloodstream. And HeartGuard can kill these worms. And so basically, if you don't test an animal ahead of time before starting it and you give it, you can actually potentially, it can be dangerous. So that is why, you know, we want to make sure that people don't just give the HeartGuard without testing first, especially when you've been off of it for a period of time. So that's the reason for it.
Lori, thank you. We have a tweet. Could the panel share info about the importance of dental work for pets, specifically cats? What age and how often to get it done?
That's a great question. You know, there's not a specific age because it's based on genetics as to how quickly you're going to form tartar on your teeth. Also, the cat's diet. And then what the preventative measures that a pet owner is using. If they're brushing the pet's teeth, they may not need a dental cleaning for many, many years. So I would say it depends. I would say most cats probably need a dental cleaning regularly after 7 to 10 years of age, I would say at least. Some veterinary dentists are recommending for dogs to have a dental prophylaxis starting at 1 to 2 years of age. So it just depends on the breed of dog, for instance. Larger breed dogs tend to do maybe a little bit more chewing on bones and than small breed dogs that may be genetically predisposed to having more dental disease. So there's no right answer for that. Speak with your veterinarian. They can do an exam, and that would be the best bet to give you advice on that.
And I think, too, something that I tell my clients is just when, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, he has dog breath or whatever. But that's, you know, actually the tartar, when it builds up like that, it's actually an infection in the mouth. And that's really, you know, the pathway to the body. So all that bacteria is chronically getting seeded in all of the organs, so kidneys, heart, and it can really decrease the lifespan of an animal. So to stay on top of it, it's a great question because you really should be staying on top of it. And when it comes to just wellness in general for your cat or dog,
Janice on Facebook posted a photo of her dog and says, this is Wallace, my 7-year-old Airedale. He was diagnosed with chronic bronchitis after a horrible bout of kennel cough and pneumonia this fall. He was up to date on his vaccines within 6 months and got sick anyway from a friend who was a regular at a doggy daycare. What is your opinion on 1, chronic bronchitis treatments, and 2, spread of diseases at these indoor doggy daycares?
So sorry, Janice, that's really rough. And chronic respiratory disease can be pretty tricky to treat in dogs as well as in people. So the diagnosis, so it's really great that you keep your dog up to date on vaccines and everything, but vaccines are not completely preventative. They're not completely efficacious. The other thing about respiratory diseases is that we're seeing a bunch of different diseases besides the traditional kennel cough, and it's really hard to diagnose exactly which one is causing the problem without extensive testing, so a lot of blood work and sometimes even taking a sample from the lungs. So I'm not sure what type of a workup you've had, but that can often be helpful to try to target the treatment. So it can be just as simple as just some x-rays, or we actually will do a wash of the lungs to see what organisms are living down in there to try to treat appropriately.
And the typical kennel cough vaccine that you get is just one type of bacteria, one of, like Dr. Steinberg said, one of many that could possibly be creating the symptoms. So if maybe this dog was exposed to Bordetella, which is the bacteria that we're protecting against in the kennel cough vaccine, they probably would do just fine. But it could be that there was another bacteria that was, or virus that was associated.
And her question about doggy daycares, my guess is it's a balance. You know, people who are taking their dog to a doggy daycare are doing out of love to let their dog have some fun during the day and get some exercise. And but just like any place where a bunch of humans are in the same place, you are more likely to catch something.
You bet. Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go on to Jody, who's calling from Sumner. Hi, Jody. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. We have a 8-month-old, 65-pound golden retriever puppy that we have not yet gotten spayed. I'm considering the procedure where they spare the ovaries. I wondered if the panel had an opinion about that procedure. Plus, I live in Western Maine, and I can't seem to find a veterinary practice that will do that for me. Thank you.
So, Jody, thanks for calling in. You're saying spare the ovaries and take the uterus, or?
Yes.
So I really would advise you against that. So there are very limited people that are doing that in the United States for a certain reason. So when you leave the ovaries, the main reason that we spay dogs, main reasons that we spay dogs are to get rid of that hormonal influence, which has been shown to cause mammary cancer, so breast cancer in dogs. And they're once you start going through more than 3 heat cycles, these dogs are at a very high risk of developing mammary tumors. The other problem with leaving the ovaries, even if you take the uterus and leave a little bit of the uterus, you can still have a uterine infection with the remaining part of the uterus. So I really strongly recommend against that procedure. Is there a reason why you wanted to keep it besides just keeping the normal hormonal influence of the...
It was just keeping the normal hormonal influences because I had... You know, I've been doing a lot of research on it because all of the dogs that we've always had have been from the kennel, from the pound, and they've been spayed or neutered very young.
Yeah.
And I understood the benefits of waiting until their growth plates are in place or fully developed before you have them spayed or neutered. And then there's some literature about the benefits of having the hormones throughout their lives.
So I would say all of that data is very preliminary, and I agree. I think it's in my opinion, and this is totally opinion, waiting for them to reach skeletal maturity. But the one thing that's proven the most is mammary cancer risks going up, which can be very deadly and very scary, as well as uterine stump pyometres, which is an infection of the remaining part of the uterus. And I think that outweighs any kind of anecdotal evidence of leaving those hormones in for the life of the dog. But it's definitely a hot topic now. I just, mm-hmm. there needs to be more data, and I think it's too scary to do that to your pup.
Jody, good luck to you. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more in your comments or questions. You're listening to Maine Calling.
It's an immigration impasse.
The longest shutdown of the government is because of the wall. What is that about?
But it's not the first failure. We're going to take a trip back in time to find out why immigration reform fails. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
The Takeaway is coming up this evening at 7 here on Maine Public Radio.
Governors across New England are talking about jobs and how much those workers get paid.
The 21st century workplace also means moving to a $15 minimum wage.
But not everyone agrees. On Next from the New England News Collaborative, minimum wage in politics and in practice. Plus, we'll go to a place that's saving both horses and human lives.
Some of them are broken, yet they can recover.
Please join us.
Next New England is coming up in the next hour at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answers to your pet care questions. Joining us today, three veterinarians. Ezra Steinberg with Maine Veterinary Medical Center, Kate Domenico with Tender Touch Veterinary Hospital, and Deirdre Fry with Vet at Your Door. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Chuck. I have a 15-pound cat in an 11-pound body. Just can't seem to get the daily food intake below the needed 200 calories without much yelling and screaming. Any suggestions?
That's a difficult thing. We deal with that quite often with overweight cats. There are some veterinary prescription diets that have been shown to help with metabolism and help the cat feel less hungry while put on a diet plan. So consult with your veterinarian about those diets.
Yeah, and I get this question a lot too. It's a problem in cats that they do tend to get overweight, especially indoor cats. And there are a lot of cool products out there actually now where the American Association for Feline Practitioners actually recommends feeding in a way that is interesting to them. So they make these like little mice that you can fill up with food that a cat can actively hunt. You know, there's like four or five throughout the house. So through the day, they can, you know, have a good time kind of searching for their meal, and it can really burn calories as well as just keep things interesting for them. And the other thing is if they're waking you up at 4 a.m., you can get an auto feeder so that, you know, that becomes their god instead of you, so to speak. So that's another option.
Okay, we'll go to Jacqueline in South Portland. There we go. Hi, Jacqueline. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I just had a quick question. So I got a new cat about 2 weeks ago, and unfortunately he came from a home that had fleas in it. And so I didn't know when I got him, but I took him to the vet and we quickly found out that he was covered in fleas and unfortunately having an allergic reaction. So his lip had become quite swollen. So I feel so bad for the little guy because we have him in a spare bedroom, you know, with no fabrics in the room so that we can make sure it's clean. He's being treated on a 3-month plan to make sure that the fleas are gone. But is there anything that you guys would recommend in the meantime to kind of ease his anxiety? Being in a new home isn't easy, especially, you know, a scary room where we can't let him out into the whole house anyway. So anything you would suggest for getting him acclimated?
I've used, there's something called Feel Away, which is a pheromone diffuser that you can purchase at the pet store. And that's been shown to relax cats. There's also, people have used Rescue Remedy, which is used for anxiety in people. There's also a formula for pets. I don't know if Deirdre has.
Yeah, I mean, I think just doing short little bursts of meeting, you know, I don't know if you have other cats in the house at all, but just kind of meeting the rest of the house, I guess. So kind of taking them out of the room unsupervised and just letting them get used to the area. And kind of it's nice that you have kind of a room devoted to your new cat, just because that can really just become their safe space, you know, and then they'll be able to kind of grow from there. But yeah.
And I don't know, Jacqueline, is there a window in that room?
Do I go in that room?
Is there a window to the outside in that room?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's pretty good for cats, too. They like to check out what's going on outside.
Jacqueline, thank you. We'll move on to Brunswick and Sherry. Hi, Sherry. Go ahead.
Hi there. My question is kind of twofold. I have a German Shepherd Great Pyrenees pup that is a rescue. He just turned about a year old, that we are beginning to experience some aggressive tendencies with, which haven't really had experience with our previous dogs. He seems to be super protective of his owners, his pack. And if somebody tries to come to our house, he loses all focus of listening to us. He will lunge. He will growl. He has never liked being kenneled. So if we attempt to kennel him to keep him and the people that come into our house safe, he will not relax and will bark incessantly to the point where he'll rip a toenail off. So I'm curious as to how to sort of minimize this behavior. He does go to daycare every day because we thought, you know, maybe this is excitability driven. That doesn't seem to help. Even in the evenings, there are times where it's just my husband and I, and the dog will pace, and he just can't slow his mind down. So one of the things that we have had some success with is putting him on a leash and saying, okay, you're going to limit yourself. And at that point, it sort of seems to quiet his mind, and he will relax and lay down. But I'm looking for some insight as to how to address this behavior that seems sort of anxiety or excitability driven.
Yeah, it's a tough case, it sounds like. And it also sounds like you've been doing a lot of, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. And sometimes a behaviorist can really help, you know, hiring somebody who, I guess, does this for a living and figuring out what the real triggers are to this aggressive behavior. And really, is it protective? Is it fear? It could be many of those things. And to really pinpoint exactly what it is, I think, can be very helpful in developing a plan to make it better. The other thing it sounds like is your dog has, you know, breeds in it that really do sort of resonate with protection, whether it be a farm or a person or whatever. So really making, you know, them feel like they're not in charge can sometimes help. So like you're saying, putting him on a leash or sending him to his bed when somebody comes over rather than let him be around the person who just came in. His job is to stay on the bed kind of under your command. That can sometimes help as just sort of a process that you can try. But as you know, with big breeds like this, it can become very dangerous very quickly. So to get a professional to come into your home and really just evaluate what's going on, I think can be extremely helpful, especially at a young age that you're, you know, devoted to this, I think is great.
Well, this is a great question because I want to find out, how does someone go about trying to find a professional, figure out who is a really good animal behavioralist to help you?
It's a great question. And there are a lot of people out there, and I think talking to your veterinarian about people who are local, who have a really good reputation, is a great start.
Yeah, unfortunately, board certified behaviorists are not in Maine at this time, mm-hmm. and we're in discussion actually with somebody. There's such a need for them, but Sherry, it's an awesome question. A typical behaviorist appointment will take 3 hours, just as an introduction, 3 hours of just sitting and talking, and then months of follow-up, so it's not easily answered. I will say that, as Deirdre said, that these breeds, a German Shepherd dog and a Great Pyrenees, can be very protective. I also, again, granted this is from a surgeon, there are also breeds of dogs can have hip dysplasia. So the standard answer whenever you're talking about a behavioral problem is there an underlying medical issue behind it? So is there a chance that he's in a little bit of discomfort? And my mind goes to hip dysplasia. So prior to solving what's going on in their head, you need to make sure that the body is comfortable. So if he's pacing around, sometimes that is that he's uncomfortable, doesn't want to lie down, and then that can trigger some sort of mental unrest. And I'm not saying that he has hip dysplasia by any means, but that's one reason to really get a thorough exam by your vet and make sure that there's nothing underlying.
Good luck, Sherry. We'll move to Falmouth and Mary. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Yes, I have a year and a half old Frenchie, French bulldog. What a character. He's sitting on my lap licking my face right. His head shakes back and forth when he looks up, especially when we're preparing food. It's almost like a seizure. It's quite rapid. It goes from left to right. Have you ever heard of that?
I have heard of it. It's kind of like a head tremor. And Frenchies, as well as bulldogs, are sort of overrepresented with them. And they're basically idiopathic, which is like a fancy word for we have no idea why it happens. But that could be what's going on. And sometimes it is like an intention tremor. So when, you know, he's intending to do something, whether it be eat that food that you're getting ready, that's when it sort of gets worse. And there really is no issue with that. It doesn't affect their lives in any way. It doesn't mean anything is wrong necessarily, but that could be what's going on. Of course, you should always have your animal seen by a veterinarian just in case it is something else, but that's what it sounds like to me.
Mary, good luck to you. Eileen on Facebook says, can you ask the vets to talk about canine cognitive dysfunction? In particular, are there studies showing clinical benefit to medications? I want to start by saying, what is canine cognitive dysfunction?
Well, I'd say a good analogy for that is Alzheimer's in dogs, as they call it, or dementia. So obviously, dogs don't read the newspaper or have to, you know, drive the car, but they can be forgetful as to remembering where to go to the bathroom. They can be have discomfort at night when the lights go off, and then they do have trouble sleeping. There are lots of scientifically proven medications for this disorder. There's also a lot of homeopathic medications for that as well, so something to speak with your veterinarian about.
All righty. We have two tweets, both about CBD, and I'll read the second one. I have a 12-year-old cat who has a violent tail-chasing behavior for about a year and a half. A full exam showed no issues, but research we did pointed to feline hyperesthesia. We began giving him a tiny amount of CBD oil daily, and the problem is mostly gone.
That's great news.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's really great.
So, and the other tweet wanted to know, you know, made it sound as though, I can't find it now. We have so many questions. Okay, but.
So, again, in terms of CBD, they are doing a lot of research on for cancer and for pain. And we're seeing some good stuff. Cornell is doing a really big project right now. There's some other research going on in Colorado and seeing some great effects.
And I did find it. Wanted to ask that very question, thank you very much.
Yeah. And the other thing is that I'd be cautious with is it's still not regulated great. So if you're going to buy some CBD, just make sure it's from a reputable source, because somebody can just put a bottle of water together and write that it has CBD in there. So the amount of active ingredients is very, I guess I would say, subjective by the company. So just research the company, make sure it's coming from a good source, and get it from them. It's very expensive.
And we had lots of questions coming in we didn't get to, but that's going to be the last one. Thank you all so much for being here. The voice you just heard, Dr. Ezra Steinberg, a surgeon at Maine Veterinary Medical Center. Kate Domenico is also here, a veterinarian at Tender Touch Veterinary Hospital in Scarborough. And Deirdre Fry, owner of Vet at Your Door, a house call veterinary practice. Lucy Suchek ran the board. Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith are the producers. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling.